Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
For the first time. From Kentucky Downs, the Dueling Grounds. Another new venue, another new racetrack, and a racetrack like I won't say none we've ever seen, because if you've been to a hunt meet, if you've been to Far Hills, it has that kind of feel to it, kind of redolent of a hunt course, just the undulating, everything that you see and absorb when you get those oddball camera angles and switches, and the sense of the breadth of it, it is all right there, laid out in front of you in a pastoral setting, somewhere between Louisville and Nashville. Hammer finds it every time he needs to get here. Good morning, everybody. Coming to you from Franklin, Kentucky, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Hammer, here we are again.
We've done it again. We've found a new venue, a new locale, and kept the summer run going. It's fantastic. But we just had we're open. The track is open today and tomorrow for horses to go out there and gallop. And the horses are like the people. I think they're like, where am I? I've never seen this before. But as I told Steve, and he finally realizes, it's hard to explain. You have to see it. And he mentioned the camera angles, and as you watch a race from here, the camera changes, and you can see why. There's just the left turns and the right turns and everything else. It kind of gives it, leads to those quick camera changes. But beautiful morning here. There's nothing quite like it, and I'm glad Steve made the trip to see. He's shooting pictures here left and right. I'm sure he'll be posting them on his Twitter page. But yeah, we're halfway through the meet. Finished yesterday up for Wednesday. We'll race today, take tomorrow off, and then come back Saturday with a blockbuster Saturday card, and Sunday will be closing day here for the 6 days. And it's kind of neat with the configuration of dates this year. We've had 6 days before where it's taken about 15 days to get through them, and now with the 2 days, one off, two on, one off, two on, I think it's kind of neat because it keeps it going, keeps the momentum going, and kind of cool. Had some great reaction from the new setup here, with the new marquee tent and the finish line pavilion outside here with the tables, and I don't know. Halfway through, it's been kind of cool.
I can think back, and certainly anybody that's listened to the show for years knows that we've had conversations every year, essentially, as the meet came along, or as there were, arm wrestling that went on regarding the dates. The Kentucky Downs has had to vie for position on the September calendar, going all the way back to when Turfway was running their September meet, which has now been taken over essentially by Churchill and Keeneland and etc. But the money that's generated by the HHR equipment and was pioneered by Kentucky Downs, and if we go back to those discussions we had years ago with Corey Johnson, as Corey really brought this thing forth, and it just seems that every year it keeps kind of morphing and changing and growing in different ways. I can see that there's construction plan that looks like hotel is coming, and it just keeps expanding, and it's been. I mean, without having, let's say, Ron Winchell here to discuss, and maybe we'll get Ron tomorrow. I think he's coming in today for the rest of the week. But you know, frankly, Corey Johnson's history that conversations we had for years, you know, can tell you really the story. The appreciation that the state and racing interests and breeders and everybody should have for what happened here, it should be profound, because it absolutely changed the entire landscape when Kentucky was actually on its heels and being essentially attacked between West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, and then Ohio joined the fray. And if it wasn't for what Kentucky Downs crafted, Ellis would be gone. There wouldn't be Turfway. You know, you got the proliferation of these harness tracks that Keeneland and Churchill have partnered up on, the Red Miles remake, and everything that's gone on at Churchill as well. I mean, Keeneland always had alternate revenue because of the sales company, but Kentucky Downs, this you know, crazy specialty facility changed the whole map.
That's a good point. I mean, this former literal dueling grounds, right across the border from Tennessee, and you mentioned Corey Johnson and his team. Am I going to say 12 years ago-ish, came in and turned this, you know, just this field into the racing, brought in the machines, and like you said, really kick-started everything going. And Corey did his deal, got out about 3 years ago, and then the new team with Ron Winchell and Mark Falcone here, taking it up another level. And you mentioned the date situation. I think after years of give and take, as I'm now working in the Midwest with Kentucky and Oaklawn as well, the scheduling I wasn't quite familiar with and didn't quite see where the battle lines were drawn. But Kentucky Downs, because of that and the money they've earned, the KTDF and their distribution of this money, has helped establish an area for Kentucky Downs to run its dates now. It was a little bit of a fight here. You know, we'll take a day here, give a day there. But this year's dates with the ending of being able to run on the Sunday and the Monday, Labor Day, and get that day in. And now there's no California running and there's no New York running here this coming up. So it's a perfect spot. The sale starts
Monday.
We end on Sunday.
Yep.
The sale starts on Monday. So it really kind of keeps Kentucky in the eye again. And so a lot of people come here on Saturday. It's going to be, I don't know where they're all going to go. There are going to be people standing, you know, on their car roofs looking over, you know, trying to catch a view. But because of the sale, I think Saturday is going to be a blockbuster day. And so there's just, if you're here for the sale, there's no reason not to come down here. So I think the dates have really found a spot where 6 days is solid. There's talk of maybe trying to add one more day next year and for the future. And I think, you know, 7 would be maybe the number. You don't want to get too big and ruin a good thing because it's so special in the way it is right now with the 6 days.
And that, of course, in the wake of Saratoga, you know, kind of a similar theme, where I did hear people, you know, people debating should there be more Saratoga. And I had actually, on closing day, when I put up the selections, I wrote, any more would be, you spoil it. It becomes, it takes away from, you know, the mercurial and you know, specialty event feel to it.
It's like when you keep backing up to take that picture. You don't want to take that one extra step and fall off the cliff. I think they're at the edge.
Another selfie mortality.
Exactly.
Another selfie
but
tragedy.
Now, so I went twice to Saratoga. I had two runs. I went in July for the first time, and it was, I loved it. Of course, it doesn't matter when I go. I enjoy it. But a little different feel in July. And then I came back 2 weeks later on sales week in August. Total different feel. So I think it's fine the way it is there. I mean, just more opportunity for people to go and see the greatest place in the world, as far as I'm concerned, to see racing and people and enjoy the sport. But I think that you're right. I think they're fine. You don't want to take one more step back, and it'll just be too long. But I enjoyed the two different times I went, and as far as I'm concerned, it's just more opportunity to get there. But I don't think they're going to do that here. I don't think the other tracks would allow them, because they're bookended on each side. But it fits right in, and like I said, you know, when you come here, whether you're a horseman or you're working, it's go, go, go. I mean, we got here, I got here on the 30th. Today's the, I don't know what day it is. Today's the 9th. And you just go, go, go. As soon as you get here, I'm here at 5:30 this morning to open up the gates for the track. There's people here. You go all day long, and then you rinse and repeat until the meet's over. And but it's great because you just go. So fun meet, fun people, and good racing.
Well, and if you haven't looked ahead, of course, today is day 4. I gave everybody the 2-day on Tuesday. Brian Skirka had sent me the top 10 after the first pair of handicapping challenges. You can get involved on an individual basis, or you can play the 2-day. It feels like it's probably might be a little too late unless you really put a blitz on for these last three cards today, Saturday and Sunday. The Saturday card, and I've not really looked at Sunday yet. Right, it's drawn though.
Sunday's drawn.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at Sunday.
Neither have I. They all. When you think about it, we do 6 days, 10 plus races a day, 100 and some horses a day. So all of a sudden, you got about 700 horses that you're looking at. It just kind of, you know, flow through your head. So you have to look at the form to see which day they're running. But sadness by far. This Saturday.
But the Saturday card
best
is...
best card that we've put on here, I would say, a Kentucky Downs.
Well, when you're offering $2 million races, Rick, it's hard, you know, it's hard not to attract. And looking down this card, I think there's only two races. Yeah, only the second level allowance third and the ladies turf, which is still terrific, including that Princess Grace that we talked about with Mike Stidham, actually, thanks to my man Freddie, who reminded me it was Princess Grace was Stidham, and the Wooten Asset and the other Tuned was the conversation with Graham Motion the other day. But nine horses there, nine horses in that second level allowance with an entry, and everything else, capacities, and the stakes sequence, the ladies sprint, going 6.5 for 500,000, that ladies turf, 750,000, the turf sprint, which drew just an amazing, amazing group, including, arguably the three best, most notable turf sprinters right now, and that includes Casa Creed, Got Stormy, and Imprimis. And Imprimis, you said Joe came early, and Joe O, and is out there. You know, has been out there a little bit.
Yeah, I saw him this morning, and it's just another example. Joe's been a friend for 30 years, and you never know where you're going to run into him. And he said, the horse got here, and we heard some announcement that the track was open today. And like I said, it's an odd day, so he said, let's take him out. So. He said that doing great. He said,
"Wouldn't trade places with anybody."
No, Imprimis won the race last year, and last year was in a driving rainstorm. Got Stormy also won here last year in a driving rainstorm.
That's right.
We're not having any driving rainstorms. I'm knocking on this plastic wood here, but the weather's supposed to be beautiful, sunny, hot, and so it'll be firm. But Joe said the last workout in Florida was just fantastic. And he was out there this morning jogging around, and he'll be coming into the race super. But like Steve said, that's right now is, at least hopefully the Breeders' Cup will come up with a better sprint. But for what we have here, this is fantastic. And what's really neat about this place as well, there's some days tracks have the big days, and you know, not that many trainers get involved here. I'm counting quickly. I think we have 60 trainers that have horses in that day. which means everybody participates. Yeah. Everybody come. They come from all over. There's seven or eight horses from California. Of course, Florida makes up, Kentucky makes up the bulk. And, you know, you got to say, you know, thank you to the Kentucky Horsemen. Of course, they're running for big money, but they have responded. And like Steve said, you put this kind of stuff up. They're showing the way the horsemen show their support is entering their horses. And boy, they sure do here. And on Sunday, I think of the 10 races, I think nine are oversubscribed. And so it's sometimes as a bettor, it's a little challenging, but hey, you're right, you get paid.
Hey, you know, it's funny you mention that, and I do want to note the other stakes too, the other $1 million race, the Turf Cup and long running Turf Cup, and here you've got the likes of Arklow and Channel Cat for Jack Sisterson, Zulu Alpha, you know, all I don't want to say the usual suspects, and there's also the $600,000 Franklin Simpson for the three-year-olds that goes as the 10th, and then it ends with a two-year-old maiden special weight. And as to the handicapping discussion,
let me yeah. add one quick thing. You mentioned the Franklin Simpson. We have a filly that shipped over from Ireland, Miss Amulet, that actually got here a few days ago and went out and jogged around this morning, and she's running against the boys. She's a grade two winner that decided to make the trip. So maybe the first of a small wave of Europeans. We're happy to have her over here and the connections to kind of be an advertisement for what Kentucky Downs is and the setting and they got here the other day and looked around and said, wow, we feel at home. So she comes, and hopefully things will go well with her, and they'll go back home and say, hey, you guys need to come back. So this is the first of hopefully many Europeans that make their way over here.
Well, that would not be a surprise at all, and the key to it is the money. This is money that just isn't offered in Europe at all. And she's coming out of the July Cup where she got beat by a considerable margin. She was 33-1, but certainly people will remember her from last fall when she came to Keeneland and ran a very nice third and was making steady progress in the Juvenile Fillies turf behind Aunt Pearl and Mother Earth. And Julian Leperoux rode her that day. He rides her on Saturday. This is Doreen Tabor. Ken Condon comes over with this Sir Prancelot filly, and that'll certainly be a talk. She came into the Breeders' Cup off the Chevrolet Park second behind Alcohol Free, who's gone on to a good three-year-old campaign. So this is notable. You're absolutely right that a Euro targets this, and I think you're right. This might be the start of some incursions.
Right. You mentioned the money, and obviously the KTDF is a large part of the purse, but the purse is $600, and obviously she's not a Kentucky bred, but she's running for $300,000, which is a very healthy purse anywhere you go. But the money is just. It's here, and like I said, everyone is. You put the money down.
Oh yeah,
they're coming.
Well, as John and JJ always said, horses follow money. That's the long running At the Races moniker.
Not just horses.
When it comes, that's right. When the we'll have plenty of handicapping discussion. But one thing you kind of alluded to, so far these three cards, there's been either fairly inscrutable winners or very formful winners, and it there really hasn't been that much in between.
Well, opening day we had the $100 winners, we had the $3 winners, but we had a couple 12s and 20s and 25s. But in general, you're right, and it's we're trying to make out a ticket, especially a horizontal deal. I think the key is figuring out which of the ones you can go light in and which the ones you can come close to hitting the all button on and hope for the big score here. But the handle's been well, and
yeah, they don't report right until the end of the meet.
I guess you know that's a new deal, which is fine. I don't know. They're not going to give daily amounts, and I don't ask because that's not my program. But at the end of the meet, they'll put it out. But I do know that the first 3 days were very healthy.
You mentioned KTDF, the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, and the assorted Kentucky service agencies in the game, and Hammer probably a appropriate opportunity to turn to you, because I mentioned it yesterday that you would certainly have thoughts and a tribute from your perspective on Dr. Richardson, given your long time service on the Graded Stakes Committee and his long association with it as well.
I'm sure you talked about it yesterday or the day before, but Dr. David Richardson, what a person. I had the pleasure of knowing him basically through the Graded Stakes Committee, the work we've done together for the past 10 or 12 years, and I was just very impressed by him as a person, as a leader, as a racetracker. I don't think racing could have had a better friend for the 40, 50 years he was involved in it. I've known him for the last 10 years or so, but I felt like it's one of those guys you've known your whole life. And he was on the Graded Stakes Committee for many years, and then he got termed out, and then he came back. And I was just in a meeting with him less than a month ago in Saratoga, and actually literally sat right next to him, and he was full of life, and he was got elected to a new term, and he was back, and it was like, wow, this is great. And he's done a lot of things. He was in the Breeders' Cup and Toba and Jockey Club and Graded Stakes, but I tell you what, he was a true race tracker in a sense that he did everything. He owned him, he trained, and they didn't train him, excuse me, he bought him, he sold him, and boy, I tell you what, he liked to bet on him too, and that kind of completed the circle. But I tell you what really hit me with him, and I remember going home, and he took over the leadership of the Graded Stakes Committee. He was the chairman, and I don't know, whenever you have a job or you're doing something in your life or career, you always like to think that the guy who's above you or your boss knows more than you, so you can learn something from him or whatever. And boy, I tell you what, I don't know if there was ever a place where he might not have been the smartest man in the room. Every meeting I've been in with him, everything, he knew more than anybody as far as the horses and where they belonged and the stakes and just a very impressive gentleman. And it's hard to imagine that he's gone. Anyway, I'm not the only one, but he was a special person to me.
That's the absolute universal response to this tragedy. And you and I were talking yesterday as I was driving. I flew into Louisville because the Albany to Nashville is not an easy. You don't have your wide array of options. And you said the one of the key elements of this is that so many people that were at Saratoga, saw him and within weeks, and then he's gone, and it's obviously there's people listening right now that have got absolute direct ties to people that COVID has taken or has affected and affecting. This was so sudden, seemingly, and it very sobering, Rick, on that front. Yeah. I mean, that you look up and he's gone.
I didn't believe it until I saw the picture with the article to make sure they had the right, right guy. Oddly enough, I remember the last thing he said as we were leaving the meeting, because it was up in Saratoga, and it was on a Tuesday, and we would have been racing the next day. And I remember him saying, "Hey, you know what box I'm in. If you like anything, come and see me."
That's fabulous.
Yeah. And that kind of sums it up right there.
I love that. That's a wonderful. That's a wonderful way to.
Yeah.
Wow. So. I appreciate it. I yesterday, as we talked, and thanks again to Dan Metzger and Bill Landis, who, I mean, literally, within hours, even though apparently, the intimates of the Richardson family and of Doc, they knew over the weekend that things were tenuous, but I really appreciated them sharing and getting through it, because both, when I talked to them yesterday morning, said, "I'll try," they both were perfect. Dan offering kind of a industry professional view, and Bill Landis offering a little bit more on the personal front, and as a breeder. And so anybody that's reads the trades and is close to conversation points, Twitters, and so forth, you can see the outpouring. Outpouring of stakes races yesterday, want to give you a quick let's catch up on this. I'm going to also, we got to get Dick Powell in as well in this hour and talk about, I want Dick's thoughts on the end of the meet at Saratoga, and then of course the first two meetings of the season at Hong Kong. And it seemed like there were plenty of people that were, despite the intensity of Labor Day weekend, people were ready after Saturday to dive right into Sunday morning, early hours, and play Sha-Tin. And then yesterday, once the show started, I got distracted, but watched the first four from Happy Valley yesterday morning. So we're going to get really kind of try to get everybody involved. But here at Kentucky Downs, Hammer, there was a nice variety of winners. And in fact, all three of the venues we talked about going into yesterday, Kentucky Downs, Indiana Grand, and Canterbury, there was a little of everything, including some controversy. They open the gates and there's going to be controversy.
It's called horse racing.
This is not a video game. Although I'm sure there's controversies in that too. But you had a nice variety yesterday of particularly of horsemen. And speaking of Dr. Richardson, there was Tommy Drury yesterday winning the second race with Voluble, and for owner Brett Bresser. And of course, this was a nice $21 winner with Miguel Mena. And I saw where Miguel said, "I'm off the duck." He was happy to get that win. Joel Rosario has barely been the story here. It's hard not to focus on what he's done here in these first 3 days. He wins 10 races the first 2 days, and then comes back yesterday as well, and adds another. And there was also, I suppose we should slip in, Jose Ortiz with a COVID positive, and so he's going to miss the meet and has to quarantine, essentially. How about E.T. Baird winning here yesterday, Haver?
Well, I heard... Now, yesterday was an odd day for me. Like I told you, a lot of stuff happens here. And the paddock guard, who opens the gate to the main track after the horses leave the paddock, and also hangs the tags on the horses coming back to get tested, didn't show up. And I happened to answer the phone to take that information about 15 minutes before first post. So I was the paddock guy yesterday, running around doing all that stuff. So when you're down there and you got gates to open and stuff to do, let me tell you, I watched the races, but I don't know what they paid. I don't know anything because you're too busy running around. But I heard Larry Colmus, who's here calling the races and doing a great job, by the way, in this configuration. I heard him say down the stretch with E.T. Baird, and I had to pull out my program and you know, check it out. Which, but it's very cool. Like I said, everybody shows up here, and everybody's got a chance to win. But, yeah, pretty wild. And I got to say, being down there, I hadn't changed into my afternoon attire. I had shorts on and a polo shirt, a Yankee hat, and getting second looks, like, what are you doing? But I saw more people down there, assistant trainers, even grooms, and some jockeys I haven't seen in a while down there at ground level. I had a ball. I said, "I'm, you know what? Next year, I'm doing this for a day again." I said, "You know,
you're going to request."
I am requesting to be the paddock guy for a day. But no, it's fun. It's the amount of people I mentioned it on Monday. I think that show up here. When you see the names in the program, it's not the third assistant that comes here. They come, and more and more owners are showing up too. So it's just kind of neat to be here. There are a lot of them are Kentucky based, so coming here from the Keeneland, Lexington area, or the Louisville area is not, you know, it's not that far out of the way. So they do tend to show up.
A couple of other winners that occurs to me to mention. How about Bill Mott here? And this was Jane Lyon with a homebred, the 4-year-old Newsworthy, 17-1.
I think Bill's 2-for-2. That he had the winner for Frank Fletcher on opening day.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And came back here yesterday, and I think that's
2-for-3.
2-for-3. Excuse me.
2-for-3.
I knew the percentage was very high, but just an example of, you know, $35 horse for a Hall of Fame trainer. It happens here often.
Baird won for Steve Manley and Mike Piazza Racing Stable, and that was Breeze Rider, Painter, Philly. I did notice Eddie Keneally, and Eddie has got some horses, it looks like, from Green Lantern, and that includes the Curlin filly, Curly Ruth, the 4-year-old that was virtually wire to wire under the biscuit. And Curly Ruth, Rutherian, and that mare, that's a big mare that has had, maybe she herself had a nice career, but she's had a parade of winners. And I gotta go figure out the backstory on Green Lantern, and they paid $275 for her at Keeneland, and Pace and Stud bred, and I didn't. I never noticed. Arno Delacour had this filly for a while, but you'll remember Rutherian had a parade of runners that, and this one still has got plenty of upside going forward, because they get better as they get older, and I want to say Clement had most of those runners. I will pull up the produce because I'm curious. Then came the two TVG stakes. Let's get those in. And Paulo Lobo, who everybody talks about underrated trainers, and there's any number of them. I know he had that sort of extended dry period, but it seems like he's back with a lot of good horses, and here's a predictable Brazilian bred in love, and she wins at almost 9-1.
Well, Paulo, first of all, he's an excellent horseman.
Yes.
Let's say that first. But he came, I'm going to say 20 years ago-ish, he was at Santa Anita. And he sent out horses. Did he win a Kentucky Oaks?
With Farda Amiga.
Yeah, so he's won a Kentucky Oaks. He's won numerous other grade one races around. Decided to go to New York for a while. Then he, we say he had a, he disappeared.
Extended,
He went to South America.
But then when he came back,
right.
He was like, there was a point where he was like one for 70.
He didn't have many horses. I remember getting a phone call, Rick, I'm coming back. and a good guy. So he came back to Santa Anita, build up 8, 10 horses, got to a point, and then he said, I'm going to Kentucky. And has come here, he's been here for 2, 3, 4 years, kind of set up base. I think he's up, he's got more horses than he's had in a while, and not out of the realm for him to win anywhere. So he picked off one end of that, and of course the second edition was won by a horse. If you had to pick one horse, since at least I've been here 3 years, that absolutely loves this course and has run well, and that's Snapper Sinclair.
Well, and he came back and won the second, and it's so funny because I said to Steve Aspison the other morning, Monday, I said, and Snapper Sinclair back for his annual assault at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah, and as Steve has done his whole career, obviously by the number of wins, he picked the perfect spot. I mean, Snapper Sinclair could have run in that Mint Million, and it probably would have been fine. But he picked a little bit nicer spot, non-winners of a sweepstakes this year. Perfect place for the horse, and boom. You know, you just look up, and as you look down the long stretch, sometimes you can't see. You go, I wonder who that's in front. And then Larry goes, and it's Snapper Sinclair. Of course it's him in front, and just went on. I tell you, if there's ever a first race named after a horse, it would probably be him.
Name.
I'm throwing that. You know me and names. I said if it was me, I'd do it tomorrow.
That's true. You're famous for that. Who was the shepherd? Jonathan, was it Shepherd or was it Tommy Voss that came here a few times with? And I'm going to have to look it up too, because there were a couple of years, 2, 3 years in a row, where I want to say Shepherd showed up here with. Shepherd used to come with his share of runners.
Take a look at this course. It's got Jonathan Shepherd written all over
it. Yes, it does.
Although he can win anywhere, this would be perfect for him.
But there was one in particular. There's been, as this meet became more pronounced and more attractive, particularly with what Corey did to help horse players and with horse player sensibility attached. You started to watch it, annually, and I always, I always talk about Andy Serling, because this always comes at the end of, after Saratoga, and usually when things are kind of quiet, and Andy loves turf racing. He's terrific with pedigrees, and in the advent of Twitter, one money-making proposition was basically just to see what Andy's thoughts were going into Kentucky Downs races, because Andy would pop, especially with the maidens and with horses that were making turf transitions from the main track. But there just were certain, there ended up being certain horses that you would start to see. And the first thing I do when I handicap these cards, and I'm the first to admit, I do not attack these cards. I find them a little eye-crossing and a little confusing. But that was something that I knew to do right away. Look for horses that had run and run well here.
Absolutely. Horses for courses, that term was made for this place. It's just the you can see why. It's the configuration. We talked about it on Monday about some of the trainers with some of the larger stables that have run here over the years. They know what type of horse to bring here that can handle this. It's like a triathlon out there, a triathlon course. You're going up, down, left, right, and the guys know who to bring.
Cloudy's Night.
Don't know that one.
Shepherd, Cloudy's Night. He used to come here with Cloudy's Night. That's just one example. There's and obviously the poster horse now is these days is Snapper Sinclair. There's somebody out there, yeah.
Yeah, there's somebody out there.
Well, you got the sometimes you see workout notes and you see the notes dogs out. I've never seen dogs further out than this. These are the
yeah we. If the course is, I don't know, let's call it 90 feet wide, yeah, you have about the outside 15 feet to go. We try to keep them out of the running lanes, of course, because they gild a horse in there. But they do pretty good about it. I was standing out because some of them like to cheat and get inside the cones, and that's where it gets a little frustrating at some of these guys. They pretend they don't know, but they know. But a couple of them going by here. The track will stay open for another 20 minutes or so, and we'll see a few more. Now, tomorrow, when we're here, tomorrow's was a regular scheduled track day. We usually only open the track on days we don't run. So tomorrow, today there might have been, I don't know, 15 horses out there. Tomorrow there'll be 30 or 40, and they'll come out in waves, and we'll see a little bit more action out there tomorrow, Steve.
Well, you mentioned, and before I talk about Colonial in Indiana, the temporary rail, and one thing that's notable about this temporary rail is it's pretty indistinguishable from the permanent rail. And from that standpoint, I mean, usually you can see those, you know, those PVC pipe things that look kind of not chintzy, but they look like Tinker Toys. This looks like basically the same fence that is the outer rail, and they'll run today, you said, and then they'll take this down tonight, and so for Saturday and Sunday they'll have all the pristine inner portions of the course.
Right, and I mentioned right now there's two rails up, one at zero, which is the fence or the inner rail, and one at 20, and we had one at 40. So the first 2 days were run at 40, peeled that off, and ran yesterday at 20, and today will be at 20, and then we'll peel that off, and we'll be on the hedge or the fence or whatever we call it. And now I mentioned the rail. This thing is a mile and 5/16 around. So the rail, it's not that way all the way around. I think we would take up all the rail in the country if we took it all. But just the final, basically 5/8 where they run every time into the far turn and around is that fencing. The rest of it, the horse is spread out enough where it's not just a one running lane. So first year we've done it, and I think it's worked out great. Butch Lear is here. Of course, you know,
lured out of retirement.
Yeah, it's his second year here, and
I didn't realize that. Come up
with a little system here with the rails, and actually this is the same type of rail that's used at Santa Anita that we got in there 5-6 years ago. It was the same problem there. We could only move the rail a certain time, and now you can take it down during the middle of the race. You can do whatever you want. So this will help with the course, with the sodding of a portion of it, the final three quarters of it, about 60 feet out, was done this year, and once again we'll do a little bit more next year. It's so big you can't do it all at once, but moving on up, as they say.
what is the circumference?
1 mile and 5/16.
I was going to say, I wasn't.
That's why you see that's a goofy distance to run at. You say why? Well, it's one lap.
Yeah,
and it's hard to believe that Belmont is bigger, but Belmont, like here, you can actually see the horses on the backside. Belmont,
that's true.
They're so far away that you can. It's just it's long. You know, it's I think it's longer, but it obviously it's not nearly as wide.
Well, and Woodbine, I suppose Woodbine's unusual course as well,
with the turf being on the outside.
Right. Colonial.
I actually haven't been to Woodbine since they did that.
Colonial too.
Yeah. So, but it's not. This isn't a cookie cutter. This is
no. This is basically carved out of what the valley. I'd love to know how much.
Actually, this is a cookie cutter of some of the cookies I used to make. Not quite perfect.
Hey, now.
Hey.
Oh, boy. Let me quickly get through the stakes action from Indiana and Canterbury last night. And, of course, we talked to Jeff Madde on Tuesday into the Minnesota Champions card, and to Bill Downs yesterday. And yesterday's action had quite a bit of variety when it came to the stakes sequence. kind of the feast or famine in terms of low prices and one big price. You had Holy Justice upset that first leg, the back home again, and this was the two-year-olds, and I suppose if there was going to be, you know, a price in the sequence, the two-year-olds are as good a candidate as anywhere. Gennaro Garcia in here, and Southwest Racing Stables, and Bruce Murphy. This is a Harry's Holiday that Justice Farm and Greg Justice bred. Holy Justice coming off of a maiden win in June and had time to improve and that and mature and gets it done for a fat $27. So I'm sure that threw off some people in the All Stakes Pick 4 portion. You had Burning Ambition for Brad Cox, who, as Bill said yesterday, was one of the real obvious logicals. That was in the Indiana Grand. And you have there's a budding, not a budding rivalry, it's a rivalry in the Caesars. The matchup of Dynamite and Royal Prince, and they've been together in at least three races this year, and it seems that it comes down to them more often than not. Royal Prince gets put up in this race in the Caesars, and it's funny. The note talks about an attempt to savage, that, like, we haven't had enough of that. But I watched the replay a couple of times. The key to the disqualification of Dynamite, Raquel struck Royal Prince on the nose with his crop. And I know in New York, that's an automatic disqualification. It doesn't matter. Any element of it is just automatically a DQ. So Dynamite gets put gets taken down, and
When Brad was Cox that race? I mean, that's Keith DeSorm. I've been chasing that horse for a while. Where he won, and I missed him, and then he got taken down. But I think that's a universal here in the States.
You get hit, you get
caught. Sometimes you don't see it until it's too late. They watch the replays and they go, "Oh, we missed one back there." And you try and catch him, but you see it by the reaction of the horse that got hit. You see something that doesn't look right, and then you go back and catch it.
One thing that they've done, of course, with Indiana, you know, they're going up into the stewards' booth, and you're instantly plugged into the stewards' feet, and stewards take enough grief. Watch the replay, and the stewards are watching, and maybe, you know, they were on the phone. They were on the phone, actually, with Raquel and De La Cruz. But what was notable was all of a sudden they zoom in. They zoom in up the stretch, and it's like they watched it twice, the head-on, and then they zoomed in close, and they right away, you can see where Raquel caught Royal Prince with his crop a couple of times, and frankly, to Royal Prince's credit, he perseveres. But you do see him, actually, he gets hit, and he kind of doesn't jump out a half path, but he does kind of move away. He sort of shifts his shoulder after he gets caught on the nose. In the last stake too, Circle City. There you go. Hammer's got the look. It took Hammer 2 seconds to pull up the on RTN. Mowens wins the Circle City. This was the other 2-year-old group. Michael Lauer with Clary Thoroughbreds and Penny Lauer, and they actually the Lauers bred this Mohaman colt. Was a January foal too, 2-year-old. So Mowens with Sammy Bermudez at 3-2. So that was your Indiana action. And finally at Canterbury, I got to mention, because we think so highly of him, it was nice to see the win by Larry Donlin in the first, Gabriel's Legend, a 3-year-old maiden breaker on the turf. These were Minnesota breds. This is one that Larry owns. And we had a wonderful visit with him last year. In the Northern Lights debutante, She's My Warrior, Tim Padilla, horse he owns with Peter Mattson. They bred together as well. A Warrior's Reward filly. with Q, Alonso Canonez. You had the Princess Elaine, the Distaff Turf Championship, Rush Hour Traffic, with a, you know, that's a bit of a, see, there you go, right? Right?
Yep.
Turns the head. Across traffic, Philly, Rush Hour Traffic with Fuentes wire to wire and pays $1,260. Beats Ready to Run Away. Gary Shearer, and yesterday we were trying to get some getaway wins for Gary at the end of the season. Cinco Star, too good for them at 70 cents on the dollar in the Blair's Cove, the Minnesota Turf Championship. The six-year-old, such a nice horse, and Cinco Star with Carinos for Mac. And John Bentz, Love the Nest, wins the Northern Lights Futurity, 3-5, the Blame Colt, Peter Mattson bred, but owned by Bob Lothenbach, Joel Burnt trains, Ray Eichelberry aboard, and the Drop of Golden Sun won the Sprint Championship, the Crow Croc Minnesota Sprint Championship. Also, Eichelberry 9-2. Tony Rengsdorf, for one that he owns, was a Winchester Place Thoroughbreds. Nico Bay Gelding, now 6. And then you had that short field in the Sprint Championship where Clickbait just better and runs away from Star of the North. So, Mac Robertson, for one that his dad owns with John Menson and Jeff Larson. And finally, you had those two. I should mention those two because I asked Jeff Medea about it, and I'm sure some of you bet it. How about the two-quarter horse, the Futurity, Relentless Courage? This for Jason Olmstead, and Olmstead also won the Derby with Jess Rocket Man. And so a very nice day. They had two, day and night. They had a $2 million $2 million handle day at Canterbury yesterday. And I didn't really look at the, I didn't notice the, let's see, I'll tell you the, and 2.3 almost, yeah, 2.3 plus at Indiana. So everybody wrapped up, and of course Kentucky Downs, we know Hammer just suggesting that they're very happy with the way the numbers have gone here halfway through the meet. And actually Hammer's also got the numbers, he just got a phone call, but he's got the day three contest winners, or I say winners, but certainly leaders. And by the way,
it's actually day three, but really day one.
You turned it off. There we go.
We're back. Yeah, I said it's actually day three of the six-day contest, right, but day one of contest number two, and I'll find that in just a second after I get off. We'll do a quick unfunded commercial for RTN, which is just fantastic if you don't have it. Watch the races on TV, but like Steve said, he brought the race up. I got my laptop here. You can watch any replay of any race run, and it takes 2 seconds. It's I wish I'd have found this 15 years ago. It took me, I've just had it for about a year, and it's the greatest thing, greatest thing going. But I'm going to get the contest winners back up here. And it's the second, here we go. So leaderboard, race 10 on day one, which would be yesterday. I've got Frederick Reynolds in front with 3178. Chris Goodrich in second, 2600. David Rink in third, 2441. Mark Streif, 1891. Nick Nose, 1852. Joe McKay, our man Joe.
Smoking Joe.
Sitting there in sixth place with 1749. Brian Sullivan, Gary Christick, Michael Christian, and Stephen Wolfson make out the top 10. 1272 is the 10th place. So lots of things happening there as we finish out the second of three contests today. And then you want to challenge yourself a little bit. Contest number three, which will be the final 2 days, it includes that Saturday blockbuster card, and get a hold of Brian Skirka at Monmouth Park.
bskirka@monmouthpark.com.
Yes, and so I see ExpressBet players playing through ExpressBet have dominated the top 20, and TVG is also available. Some players playing through TVG as well.
Before we take the top of the hour break, too, you mentioning ADW. I didn't reach out to Bob in Arizona, but I will mention the wider opportunity to play online starts today in Arizona, finally.
You mean that year and a half, 2 year hiccup is over?
Oh, it's more than that. I mean,
5 years.
They've only ever been able to bet by phone, and like we did in New York, 100 years ago, the.
Bet by phone, meaning you call someone, the operator,
correct,
and put your bet on.
Correct.
We used to do it at Philly Park, I remember.
Like we had in New York, Capital OTB was that way. Where you, when I first moved to from Canada, that was the way you played. At least when I got started, I was kind of a slow convert to. I'll tell you, that's a funny thing. I've said this before. I've been mentioned in ages. I, at first, did not want an online account. I did not want to have it be that convenient. And I thought, you know what? If I want to bet, I'm going to get in the car. I'll go to the harness track in Saratoga, and I'll bet there. I thought to myself, you know what? This is too convenient. And it took me, I don't know, maybe 6 months to say, well, this is stupid.
I can't get next to myself. Well, I do remember working at Monmouth Park, so that would be in the 90s when Philly opened up and you were able to call in bets. And I had a visit from my good friend Bob Umphrey, and we decided that this was the greatest thing in the world. Put some money in the account, stayed there one day, and I think we lost every bet that we made. And we're like, wow, maybe this isn't so good. But so it's hard to believe that. I mean, that's the Stone Ages for wagering, that Arizona's finally out of that.
Yeah. It's a pretty monumental advance. Now, I don't know if you're probably not aware of this. The Kentucky Horsemen, there's no Kentucky signal in Arizona right now, and there's still crazy restrictions involved, but it is a step forward. But for instance, they can't bet on Kentucky right this minute. They can't bet on signals that are negotiated by Monarch, which has been an ongoing dispute, and only they can only bet online when there's a track open, meaning Arizona Downs or Turf Paradise, and there's a bunch of internecine.
So they've gone from the Stone Age to the Ice Age, but it's not quite made it here.
The Neolithic, I don't know. But it is a step forward. It is a step in the right direction, anyway. And I'm sure Arizona residents are at least happy with that. And I should get Bob Hutton in for a quick explanation of where things stand. Well, we've whittled away an hour here, and let's take a break. I got to get a visit in with Dick Powell, and I told Dick we'll probably come to you early this morning, but Hammer and I having too much fun setting the stage here from Kentucky Downs, and I know that a lot of your Kentucky-based favorites are making their way here, and I think Marty McGee, if not today, tomorrow, hopefully, we can get Marty maybe in before his last.
We've run 3 days. I think here comes Jenny Reese. I think Marty's been here 2 days at least, right? Marty,
yeah,
he was here for the first 2 days.
Nice.
He won't be here today, but he's. I
Saturday,
think he's going
Sunday.
To the backing up the Brinks truck to the account. He'll be here Saturday.
Look at this! Everywhere I look, there's Mike Kane. Unbelievable! Too funny. Mike Kane is here. It's the Derby Notes team. What's going on here? Where's Mac McBride?
It's the A team.
Mike Cade and Jenny Reese. That in fact, I ran into the two of you on an airplane. Was it the two of you? No, it was you and Joan. You and Joni. That's right. That's right. We were going somewhere. Let's take a break. Obviously, this is going to be a lot of fun. 2 days at broadcasting, and then 1 day of my usual glad handing dandy antics. Back after this, the Kentucky Dads at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Horse racing fans, major Southern California thoroughbred racing action returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse for the LA County Fair Meet. Opening day is Friday, September 10th, with a 1 p.m. first post. 5 stakes races highlight the meet led by the $100,000 Los Alamitos Special on September 19th. That weekend will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 18th. 2 berths will be up for grabs to the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. Horse racing fans, visit us on track as we offer comfortable and spacious seating areas. Watch and wager in the main grandstand or at Burgart Sports Bar. And of course, our beautiful Vessels Club is fully open both indoors and out on our patio and terrace levels. Purchase your admission tickets at the main gate or online at losalamitos.com. It's a fun time at the track. And don't forget about our $1 early and late pick fours, plus our traditional $2 pick six. Big time excitement is ahead. The LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos. Opening day is Friday, September 10th.
SiriusXM Sports presents